And actually, I'm sure people are familiar with the timelines and so on, but creating your those what-if scenarios is actually relatively straightforward. And as you know, you can build different scenarios in. But you know, if you think about you're working hard to protect post-retirement income, well, you're protecting pre- and post-retirement income by looking at those shortfalls and anything that might derail the client, you know, sickness, illness, loss, etc., you know, from completing that planning that you're working hard to put in place. Certainly, I found that when we did fully, and actually, it does need engagement at quite an early stage. So, one would have to, as a wealth advisor, of course, on the fact find, you'd have to record the existing protection policies that the clients have in place. And again, that's not always done for various reasons. Perhaps you're focusing and restricting your advice, perhaps you're focusing on one area, etc., which I can understand. But if as a wealth advisor, one uses that system to its full capacity, record the protection policies in there, punch those in, and that will do. Sorry. And that will do the job itself. So those would be my suggestions.
Okay, that's great. I mean, the question, there is quite a difference in my experience, and this is actually an exercise that our sister business advisor software.com in conjunction with Protection Guru is looking at doing some more analysis early in the new year. Some cash flow planning systems, you cited Voyant, I can think of one or two others, are really good at identifying the protection need. And whereas others, frankly, are, shall we say, limited. Indeed, I've looked at one or two, and I'm not sure. Well, I can actually think of a couple where I know the person that designed the protection module had never been involved in the sale of a protection policy in their life, and perhaps that needs rebuilding. But I think there's also a point to be made. If you're using the cash flow system in the right way, it's actually going to capture the protection need on the fly, if you like. So it is there to address. And I think also there is that question, as you called out, in terms of avoidable need. Sorry, avoidable harm, I beg your pardon. The cash flow tool potentially, if the cash flow tool is flagging to you a protection need, you probably do have an obligation to go and arrange for it to be fulfilled somehow. Lee, can I come back to you? I know you're doing some specific work around business protection training. Could I ask you to share more on that, and the plans that you're putting together?
Yeah, sure. So basically, myself and a gentleman called Stuart Halliwell, who was at Legal & General for several hundred years, I think, and led on their, he's not here, I get away with it. But he led on their business protection proposition, I think, for many years, as well as their training. But we're always very conscious, certainly when I first came into business protection sort of 10 years ago, that most of the training was typically a sort of half-hour webinar from the insurers, and they never really did much more than the real sort of basics, ABC. Certainly didn't get into any kind of complexity in terms of the sorts of risks that I see, risks where there aren't even at the moment business protection insurance products, because even the insurers aren't that familiar with, I think, some of the stuff that comes out in terms of risk profiling and de-risking certain transactions. And that there was certainly nowhere for, if I was an independent advisor with no one in my firm to talk to, there was no one to sort of coach me through the more difficult stuff as it manifests, yet alone how I opened up that market, had the sorts of conversations that you need to be able to have with a business owner, because they are far more complex. Every business is different. It's not like personal protection, where I look at a few financials and I can pretty much tell you what life insurance and income protection you need. There's just too much complexity, and business owners haven't often done that kind of succession planning and thought things through and understand even the impact it's going to have on their business and themselves. So we've put together an academy. It's sort of 20 hours of formal training over a month, then lots of follow-up and all the one-to-one coaching that people need. they're working on live cases, going out to do their first presentation to a group of solicitors, about to do their first fact find with a business. Everything you need to be competent and confident to go out there and, like I say, position yourself as another professional advisor sitting alongside the bank, the accountant, the corporate solicitor, in terms of working with business owners and looking at the points of failure in their business, how you de-risk them, how you maintain that wealth. And just, it's the first training we've seen that really gets people to that kind of level. So most of the people coming on the training so far are protection advisors that have dabbled in business protection and really want to take themselves to the next level. Because it does get complex and you want to be able to do it. And God forbid, you don't want to be the wealth advisor. And I've had this before. People come to me for something like shareholder protection after the death of a shareholder. I mean, first of all, think of the impact. If you've got a couple of business owners that are making a nice dividend and decent pension contributions every year, and then one of them passes away and there's no protection in place, well, I've seen it where it takes 3, 4, 5 years for them to pay off the debt to the estate of the deceased shareholder to buy those shares. What's that doing to their dividends and pension in the meantime? Probably very suppressed. So you're losing them there. But also, you don't want that person knocking on your door, as I've seen, where they say, well, wasn't there anything we could have done to do this? And it's like, yeah, there's an insurance policy. Why didn't you tell me about this? You've been working with me for 5 years, 10 years. You never told me that I can insure this risk. That's a really awkward conversation to have. And ones I've seen people have, and they've come to me after the event a few times where, you know, they've had to go back to their IFA or their accountant and say, why did you not tell me there was an insurable risk here that I could have covered off, instead of me now having to pay out deferred consideration to my business partner's family for the next 5 years, wiping out all of my profit until I've paid them off. And that's just one of the risks, but one of the impacts it's going to have on you and them as your client. So yeah, loads of training available, and hopefully either for you, like I say, try and start doing it yourself.
I think a really good point made there, and one that, let's face it, if one looks at many businesses, you know, where you've got a partnership, be a limited company or an unlimited liability partnership, you've got a situation where the roles of the people, successful businesses, you don't usually have multiple people doing the same thing. Different people will bring different talents. So you're also probably going to have a situation where, you know, not only have they got to meet that outgoing to the dependents, but also they're a key person down, which brings us quite neatly. We actually had questions before the session where I've been asked to ask you each to talk about the tax treatment of executive income protection. Who'd like to pick up and talk on that one, please?
I'm happy to. So shall I just give a broad overview of exec IP? So if we go straight, so exec income protection is a very tax efficient way of business owners or employees to protect the level of income that they're receiving. So when your starting point is the pre-incapacity earnings. So these can generally include the salary, bonuses, P11D benefits, etc. But equally, it also includes dividend income. And actually, interestingly, if the policy is covering a business owner, the income paid to a spouse or a partner can also be covered as well, as long as that individual's not actually responsible for generating company revenue. So that's quite an interesting angle on exec IP that I wanted to make sure I remembered to mention, because a lot of business owners do direct income to their spouse or partner for tax efficiencies, etc. So tax treatment. So typically the premiums should be treated as an allowable business expense and subject to corporation tax relief. But the good news is the policy should not be P11D benefits for the individual, for the employee. So that's all good news. There are, in my opinion, actually no downsides to exec IP. It's just positive after positive. That's my view. The payment of the benefits, the key difference really with exec IP as opposed to individual, of course, the company receives the payment from the insurer, and they then pass that on to the employee or the director through PAYE as a salary, or in fact also as potentially as a dividend as well. The claim payments are treated as a trading receipt, and tax is levied when the benefit is paid to the life insured. So that's through their salary and any dividend payments in the normal way. Interestingly, if the business owner shareholder, they might choose to claim to draw any claim benefit from the business in a more tax efficient manner than a salary. So they could actually draw that in dividend. And that's also possible. To remember, of course, there's NI and income tax on dividends and corporation tax on the profits where those dividends are drawn, but it is still a very tax efficient way. I mean, from memory, there's if you look at this setup, exec IP, as opposed to an individual director or business owner arranging an individual income protection policy from post-tax income, I believe there's around a 40%, it could even be higher, saving on the net, the money that you're in, you know, the net position, if you like, against paying for that as an individual policy from post-tax income. I think a lot of business owners are not aware of the existence of exec IP. And of course, you can cover pension contribution in there as well, which is fantastic. So employer NI, pension contribution can all be covered with exec IP.
Can I be?
Yeah, I was going to bring you in, Lee.
I actually do see a bit of a downside of exec IP occasionally, which is, unlike relevant life, it's not transferable to a personal policy if someone leaves the business.
Yeah.
So depending on someone's long-term plans, occasionally there isn't that transferability if they leave their limited company and go and become an employee somewhere else. None of the insurers have got their head around transferability yet, like they do with relevant life. I have to say, because that the time, though, I mean, every time I do exec IP, the number one reason I lean into it, where I do it, is because I've got a business owner that's making significant pension contributions. Yeah. Because it's the only way to protect them. Because with a personal IP policy, you're literally just 60% of their gross income and the pension's not factored in. As soon as someone's sitting there going, I'm putting a couple of £1,000 a month into a pension, exec IP, because I'm not just protecting their pension, I'm protecting their retirement. So if you're not doing that as the person that's putting in the pension in the first place, it sort of beggars belief a little, really, that you don't want to protect that retirement plan against ill health. And exec IP is perfect if they're a business owner for doing that. Or where you can do it, group income protection, do exactly the same thing. You know, except you're covering a load of staff as well, potentially.
Okay, great. Can I come to
One last point on the group IP. The drawbacks I find on that is the waiting period. There isn't really any availability. I think the minimum waiting period is probably 8 weeks, guys, isn't it, on that? But generally, it's 13 weeks or more. So that's the only drawback on the group side. I mean, I think on exec IP, is it a monthly? The minimum
you can have is a month. I mean, but I would flip that and say one of the benefits of group income protection, though, is if your income increases every year quite a bit, and your pension contributions increase each year because you're doing better and better, with a personal IP policy, you're constantly having to rewrite. Group income protection every year, it's an annual contract, and a point of claim is based on what you're paying yourself and what your pension contributions are at that point. So if you're tracking it over the long term, you know, I've got clients who maybe started on 30, 40 grand a year, they're now on 100 grand, they've never had to re-underwrite, because the policy tracks with them. And with free cover levels, the other benefit of group income protection is you can get insurance for people that may otherwise be uninsurable. So, and it's a foot in the door. You go and do an onboarding session for a small business and you've got 20 people in the room because you're telling them about their group income protection. Another conversation. Listen, guys, I know you're all in the Nest scheme, but who's thinking about any other pensions or investments they want to be making? So it's so many foots in the door to do business protection with people you might otherwise not see.
That's great. Can I come on to Michelle Hollywell from Towergate? Michelle, you have your hand raised.
Yes, thank you. One thing that sometimes worries me about executive income protection, and I have had this clarified by the relevant people at Aegon when they did it, LV and Legal in general, but my concern is the vast majority of cases, it's like a one-man band, or you know, lots of time, a lot of the time, if that person is incapacitated long-term, that business is going to fold. So I've, like I say, I've had it confirmed that the insurer in that case would find some way of carrying on paying that individual. You know, if the business is wound up, you know, they would pay them personally, or they'd have to kind of keep it as an entity. Have you looked into this, and do you have it? Because sometimes I still have just a slight little doubt that there'd be an issue.
Yeah.
Anybody like to come back on that? Any of our panelists?
I've certainly not. I mean, essentially, if someone's going to keep claiming on the exec IP policy, they need to be employed by the business on sick pay. And again, that's one of the other negatives, Carol, in terms of that lack of transferability. Also, if it's a one person limited company and they need to claim on it for, gosh knows, let's say a long time, 20 years, they've effectively got to mothball and keep that business, you know, trading, so to speak, just so they can be paying that benefit into the business and then into them personally. I've not seen any instance yet of an insurer saying we'll go to a direct payment model like they can sometimes do with group income protection. It's why, to be honest, when I'm doing IP for a small business owner, I will look at personal and exec IP. I will look at what they will net either way from each of those two policies. And often I will end up going with a personal IP policy because there's no restriction on them in terms of changing jobs. There's no need for them to keep the business open. They net pretty similar amounts. Like I say, the only time I really lean into exec IP is when I'm protecting a decent sized director's pension every month, because it's all of a sudden the benefit difference is huge to them. If they're all of a sudden saving 30 grand as well into a pension, that's massive. And so it's worth maybe the extra hassle for them long term. Other than that, I will often play off the two and say, well, I've got something that's a bit more transferable. You're still going to net the same. You're not paying into a pension. So actually, the personal IP policy works pretty well for you. So, yeah, I don't go into it blindly at all.
Does anybody have any idea? So you just mentioned then mothballing the company, I'm not, whatever the term is, just to kind of keep it so there's an entity for that payment to be made to. Is that a relatively straightforward thing to do? Do we know on the panel, or is that something, you know, is that something that's done, or would that be quite an unusual situation that you keep a business in place purely for that reason?
I don't know. I mean, if it was going to provide me with a source of income for the rest of what would have been my working life and protect my pension, then you can do it. It's not a massive amounts of work, but you are having to submit returns every year. And you might be paying someone else to do that. So it can be done. Yeah, but yeah, it's a bit more clunky than just having a personal IP policy that's paying you 60% of your gross, you know, as a net tax-free amount every month. So it is clunkier, which is why, like I said, unless I know I'm protecting a decent-sized pension, because even the spousal income that Carol talked about, you can cover spousal income from a small limited company with personal IP as well. It doesn't have to be exec IP. You can cover spousal income with a number of the personal income protection providers. So for me, it's that pension contribution that is the absolute game changer when I'm coming to make that decision between exec and personal IP, because the benefit amount can be 30 grand, 40 grand a year difference.
And indeed, does that, if you've got somebody who's no longer earning because they're not able to work, can that be earnings for wider pension contributions?
Sorry, say that again, Ian.
Well, if you've got somebody that's on individual IP, but they're not earning, without the earnings, can they still make the contributions? All right, I'll drop you a note later. We I think there's quite an interesting, this is clearly an interesting debate. We always leave these channels open subsequently. Plenty of space for people to come back and share other thinking subsequently. While we've been looking at tax treatment, we also had a request for explanations around tax treatment on key person on limited companies. Could I equally invite you to talk about that? Andrew, do you want to kick us off as Lee and Carol talked extensively, but I'm going to come back to Lee and Carol as well.
Yeah, look, just repeat that question again.
Can we explore the tax treatment of key person cover for limited companies?
Well, on key person, the company is the owner, the payer, and the beneficiary of that policy. when the sum assured is paid out to the company, it comes in as a lump sum tax-free amount, as far as I'm concerned, Lee. Am I correct in that?